sexy, spooky bones.
Welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I am Rolando.
Hello, welcome to the Skeleton Boys. I am all not Rolando.
You're a trickster.
And I am Trickster John.
Hey, welcome to the show. Who drinks?
Here's that CD-ROM I put my palms all over. I'm sure it still works.
My mustard banana palms.
Surprisingly, not like the most illogical thing. I was like, that makes sense.
And welcome to the show. This week, we will review Brain Scan. And so Sean will give us the plot in 5 words and give our first thoughts, and then we go to a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner. We are reviewing Hysteria, Season 1, Episode 4, Dance Macabre. Or is that right? Macabre?
Yeah, Macabre.
Dance Macabre.
Which is funny because when people they come up to like my plate, I'm not finished eating, and I have my corn on there. Mm-hmm. They're like, "Hey, what's this?" I'm like, "Oh, that's macabre." So
you're eating macabre.
Yeah, that's macabre.
Yes. What happened in this episode? What happened? I think overall. And I was just saying this to you off air, but I think this episode kind of spun his wheels a little bit. There was not a ton happened and it wasn't kind of revealing itself. But by the end, we got massive stuff pushed the narrative forward in all fronts. Every story, I think, kind of got a nice push forward.
Which also, I'm inclined to start being on your side with the whole, like, there's probably something, they're tainting the water, right?
Oh, yeah. That was my theory.
And I think people are seeing things that aren't there. I'm starting to believe that too.
Okay.
But I'm trying to figure out like why the husband hasn't gotten the rash yet. Like, not that we've seen so far. Because now we confirmed what's Bruce Campbell's name?
Sheriff.
Dandridge.
Yeah.
Chief Dandridge is got the skin condition too on his neck
that he's not aware of, right? And he is having those. Well, he did have. Well, I thought it was like an episode where the dogs like threw up the heart, but it actually did happen. Which I was.
That actually did happen, but we're unsure if the TV and you started hearing the girl screaming actually happened, because that happened right after that.
It seems like. Whoever has these quote-unquote episodes are developing the dark spotted rash.
Yes.
So that's a symptom of them having these episodes. Okay, yeah.
Which I'm inclined to believe that the Reverend, who now we can confirm is one of the masterminds behind everything that's been happening, is satanic or something. Feel like he's also doing that part.
Yeah, we finally got a face to the voice, right? The very, very brilliant Garrett Dillahunt, excellent actor.
Yes.
Is the Reverend, who is kind of manipulating or is basically I would say like pretty much manipulating the mother, right? Tracy Whitehead. And who is the mother of Faith, who got abducted at the beginning of the show. It seemed like something small, but I don't know if that's like a misdirect to think that there's more there. Because I still feel like there's larger things. But I think it would be a cheat if they introduce anybody else later in these episodes, behind these episodes. So it very well could be the Reverend, doing all of these things. That tracks.
Because we also get, we find out that Dylan was like a miracle child. So he's like, primed and ready to be some sort of sacrifice.
He's a virgin. So
important to
that's what I gathered, right?
Well, not just virgin. Remember his parents were having the conversation in the bar, and they talked about they tried really hard for a while to have a baby, and they just could never have a baby, and then one day it just magically happened. And Dylan was that baby.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I feel like all the signs are pointing towards Dylan as something
that
needed for whatever ritual.
Can we... I don't know... Man, I don't know. I feel like, can we even pin the kids? We by the end of this episode, pretty much, who's his girlfriend? Judith? Is Judith his girlfriend?
Yes.
Judith is pretty much as outed as like part of this satanic group that's infiltrated the high school, and we kind of see everybody involved, including what is it? Basically, almost all the popular Cliff. Kids. Cliff,
The choir. I think at this point, Goat Girl, played by what's her name, Shapiro.
Yeah,
Molly, right?
Yeah. So it almost seems like
Millie.
It almost seems like you're right that they've selected Dylan for whatever it is that's going on. But I was gonna say, do you think they're associated with the Reverend? Is it kind of like too early to start?
Oh no, I'm sure. I feel like it's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know what's going to happen, because it doesn't seem like the mom's involved or the chief, right? Like, it seems like they're both like, well, I have no idea what's going on. Mm-hmm. Oh, I think we finally get to meet her mom, right? Who's the bartender? I didn't catch that. I think that's the mom, right?
That's the mom, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm wondering what she's trying to get out of this. It almost feels like they're doing this ritual to get something they want. Like, Cliff wanted to be the best, but I don't know. I guess we're only halfway through the season. I'm just speculating. Yeah.
Here we go. Here's my next lizard brain crazy theory. Because I've had a lot. So here's one more. My next...
Spud.
It's Spud, exactly.
The whole time.
But it is, you're right, it is something similar to that. I'm going to guess right now the dad is more involved than we think he is. He's almost too clean cut.
That's pretty clever, yeah.
Too, you know what I mean? Outside of everything. And
he's one of the few people I think that doesn't have any sort of rash.
And he could have easily... He could be... It's almost like the Rosemary's Baby thing, right? Like he could be the one... Yeah. Helping along whatever it is that they're trying to accomplish to his own wife. There it is.
I like that. Yeah, I like that idea. Yeah.
Like almost like...
That's pretty good.
Yeah, like he's like the hand or something behind the curtain pushing, manipulating everything. That's my lizard brain theory. Yes. Yeah, that's him.
Mine is...
Spud. Spud's
it. It's Spud. It's Millie Shapiro. It's actually Payman. This would be a lot funnier if you actually finished Hereditary. But no, I like that idea. I feel like that would make the most sense.
Yeah.
And in it with the Reverend too, right?
Yep. He's probably in this group.
Yes. And I think you're right. I feel like Tracy Whitehead at this point is being manipulated, not actually, truly the bad person. I think she's been a red herring this whole time.
Yeah, she's like one of those characters that's like annoying, but it's probably not bad like these other people are. I could totally see them doing something like that. Yeah.
Where's your dad again?
I don't think they've introduced him, the dad.
Right? Or is he not around at all?
I don't think he's around.
I'm confused by that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like she pretty much is a single mom, right? I mean, they haven't explicitly pointed that out, but, I mean, there was a dinner scene where they were eating alone.
Yeah.
Twice already. And then, like, she seems like she's kind of nobody else is there, so. Oh, man, I don't know. So, I don't know. I don't even think... My suspicion is that they probably won't touch who the dad is. I don't think that's...
important, really, I guess.
But it could have been the catalyst for her to behave, become so conservative or religious because of her pregnancy.
Yeah.
Or divorce.
So you're
or...
saying the reverend that she's talking to, who gave her the nickname Firefly, is her dad. Oh, which now we're aware that Faith overheard the entire conversation because...
Yeah.
Let's see. For anybody born... post-2005 there used to be a thing called landlines, and if they were all on the same line, you could pick up a phone anywhere in the house and overhear conversations.
Yeah.
So yes, that what I think like the most key important things that happened are they released the demo, and I gotta say that the song's actually pretty bitchin'.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah. I'm actually digging this. Dylan was about to finally have sex with Judith, but she kept saying we, and then it turned into like a Midsommar thing where there was like a bunch of people waiting for them to do it.
A lot of pentagram on the floor.
Yes. And then it got, shut down because Bruce Campbell was able to like find and infiltrate and be like, what the hell's going on? And then, God, what's Dylan's mom's name? Linda Campbell. It was like Julie Bowen's character. Had another episode.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think, I feel like it's called Hysteria because like things aren't actually there. I think you're right.
Yeah.
About that. Because she's pretty convinced that, what happened with the Ouija board? I think I looked away. Or like a commercial happened right at that moment, and I was like, I don't want to rewind in case I have to watch the fucking commercial again. But the dad was, you know, you're right. The husband's been very like, he made a joke out of using the Ouija board with her by spelling out blanket because he was like, yeah, I'm a little bit cold, and it was a joke.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Ouija board did something, right? Or am I wrong?
No, I don't think it did anything significant. They played it up like it was a spirit or ghost there, but I suspect that's not what's going on at all. Because then Dylan interrupts him or something, kind of kills whatever the mood or whatever.
Oh, yeah, because Dylan said, I need to go pick up my girlfriend, and they got real like, oh, shit. And then like that was what was important all of a sudden.
Yeah, so I suspect that. So... That's totally Rosemary's Baby, don't you think?
Yeah, it's pretty Rosemary's Baby. I also like how I really like the writing of the show. I'll be honest. Like, there's what's her name? Shit, I should know everybody's name by now. Jordy.
Jordy, yeah.
Like, is very adamant about like, I'm not gonna go to a fucking stupid dance.
Mm-hmm.
And then it takes Faith to be like, go with me, and she's like, god damn it, I'll go. Like, you know, like, which I like, because it's like true to character, like, no, I'm not gonna go. And then somebody that's kind of important to her is like, you should go, and she's like, fuck, okay, fine.
I would say sometimes I agree, yeah, there's like the plotting I think is really well, and they have some great funny lines and character moments, but every now and then they have like a cringy scene, like overwritten scene every now and then. It's sometimes, unfortunately, Jordy kind of gets straddled with a lot of the bad, in my opinion, bad writing.
Oh, so you heard it here, folks, because Rolando didn't like the verbal altercation
with her.
She had with Judith.
No, I thought that was lame.
Too girly for him.
Yeah, I felt uncomfortable because I was in the girls' bathroom. That's the majority of it. No, but like, I just, the whole thing there, what they explain is like that this is like because she dresses like goth or whatever, like, yeah, that she, this is who she is. But then Judith counters with like, well, you've made a prison for yourself, you know what I mean, basically, because Jordy implies that she's just a visitor or whatever, you know, she's not really into it, she's only into it at the moment because it's popular.
And yeah, to be fair, I've like actually had conversations with women that said similar things about their upbringing and like other people that came in and Like, it's just like identity issues. And that, I think, is kind of the basis of what the show's about anyway, right?
Yeah. What do you want to elaborate on that identity thing?
Yeah, well, like, no, nobody really is sure of who they are, and they keep trying to push other things to make themselves feel like, oh, this is who I am now. And it includes even the bad guys or, like, the popular kids.
Mm, gotcha, gotcha, yeah.
Like, everybody's got something going where, like, this, I can't figure out who I am.
Like the band, right? Because they were just one type of band, and then they decided to lean into a different thing because it's more in vogue at the moment.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah.
Or like, Cliff doesn't feel like he's good enough and keeps trying, and he's like, no, I'm satanic. I mean, this is fucking cool now, right? And like, which I'm trying to figure out. He's had like a weird 180.
I would say yes, no. I think there are moments where he does have reflection, because he's painted very early on to be this sort of antagonistic asshole boyfriend. But I feel like throughout the season so far, they've tried to have moments of, you know, empathy for him, because, or quieter moments with him to kind of spell out
like
a little better.
The locker room scene where his dad, who you find out is his dad, is like, you're going to be quarterback now or whatever.
Right, yeah. But by the end of this episode, he's almost... That whole, all of those things almost seem like it was a lie, because he seems like he's very much into this group or whatever, the satanic teenage group. Like, he was part of the manipulation. No, I mean, that's where it leaves it.
And there's like, I guess if it wasn't for that girl that got the blood spat in her face, Chief Dandridge wouldn't have shown up, right? I think she's the one that fucking ratted him out.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, because he was again, to me, the all-stars of this cast, it has to be Bruce Campbell and Julie Bowman. They are doing amazing work in the show.
Giving Bruce Campbell that whole thing where that dude finally shows up to, like, clear his name, the mechanic. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. It's just like one more thing. So you never paid this ticket from like 3 years ago or whatever. So I'm just gonna have to put you in custody. Like, oh shit, that's fucking clever.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the way he's playing it is like, I feel like this is very opposite. He tends to have a very kind of like showy charisma. And I feel like this is very like calm, matter of fact kind of charisma, slightly different, more muted, but the same. Like,
I think it's also because it's what the character calls for, right? Yep. It's like, I think a chief that truly cares about what he's doing and not involving bullshit either.
And he's almost like a surrogate to like the audience in terms of like the weird shit that's going on. He's reacting to it the way we would react to it. He's kind of like going through the motions of all the unexplained things.
Like, he got that hint, that tip from Faith. He just doesn't know it was Faith, about that guy being one of the kidnappers. Mm-hmm. And he really wants to pin it on this guy because...
He's right.
If not, then the fucking, you know, he had made a great point. If it's not him, then that means there's still somebody out there that murdered somebody. So I need to figure this out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excellent work. And even Julie Bowman, I mean, she's doing amazing work. And everything.
Like I say, I really like Anna Camp too.
Yeah.
I was even talking about earlier, like, man, she played one type of character, like, what, like 15 years ago or something, and then that's kind of the only part she gets from here on out, but she's great at it.
Yeah. Cool.
Like, if you connected this to Pitch Perfect, I'd be like, yeah, sure, but it wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Going back in time.
Yeah. But yeah, so this ended with Faith meeting possibly one of her abductors, right?
Yes, I think it was the other abductor.
He feels guilty about it, and so that's going to definitely, like, unravel more.
Gilbert, who I think we've seen, and I just don't remember where. I don't know.
In this show? That character? Yes. Interesting. Okay. Let me take a look at him. You know, you're probably right, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know for sure though. Mm-hmm.
It was in Atlanta. There you go. That's where we saw him.
Oh, and then he came over to wherever they're at, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. Really good episode. We're about halfway done, I would say. Things are a lot more clear, but I'm curious about what other twists they can pull out this latter half of the season.
Yes. Oh, which also I can tell you that Gilbert makes his first appearance here in this episode. Oh. So I'm a liar.
Okay, so then he's in 5 episodes, so he's in the latter half of the rest of the show.
He's in 5 of them?
Yeah. So.
Okay, yeah, that's right. We're in episode 4. I was like, what episode are we in? Okay, cool.
Here on out, he's now an introduced character. So, cool. All right. Let's move over to our main review of Brain Scan, John.
Which, hold on, Kevin Saunders, if you're, I know you're listening to the pod. I just started following you if you want to follow me back.
Yeah, please.
Brain Scan.
Yes, John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Bring in at number 3 for the 5-word plot summary for Brain Scan. CD-ROM demon doesn't have adware. Coming in at number 2 for Brain Scan. Metaverse actually looks pretty fun.
Except for all the Nazis, yeah. All right, let's go.
Coming in at number 1 for Brain Scan. Trickster father that stepped up.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I don't know if you know this, but Brain Scan hits me right in the nostalgia. I saw this movie
in
1994.
Yes.
Loved it.
And I remember being obsessed with, like, I need to buy this fucking soundtrack.
Yes, yeah.
Like Mudhoney, Tad, I think White Zombie's in there.
Yep. And then, Primus. That's what I was trying to think of, yeah. Yes, this movie, like, literally checks all the boxes for me. There's a...
Were you also a little worried? Like, man, I remember, like, this movie was like, well, like, I really fucking loved this movie when it came out. I'm kind of worried that it's probably just going to suck now. And then I was like pleasantly surprised. It was like pretty good. It's not terrible at all.
No. Yeah. There's still like things about it that kind of don't work. Yeah. But like, it's, I would say, the great example of a cult movie. And the things that, I, for one, I cannot believe Andrew Kevin Walker wrote this movie. Who wrote 7. Like, in like 2 years, he's going to write 7. That's fucking crazy. And John Flynn, which we talked about last week, directed Rolling Thunder, which Quentin Tarantino steals all his ideas from. One of the directors he steals all his ideas from. And And I would say even Frank Langella's in this, even though he's canceled.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed even the trickster in this, T. Ryder Smith. This is...
Yeah, he was great.
A really well-made, executed movie. I would say the only thing I didn't like about it, I'm just going to say it up front, is Edward Furlong is fucking god-awful in this movie. He's so bad.
Did you read how Jeff Flynn... did not get along with Edward Furlong when they were making the movie.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then after a couple of decades of reflection, he said, like, you know, he was just like a 15-year-old kid that didn't want to be there, and of course he didn't know how to fucking act. And I was just like, like pushing him every day, and he just didn't want to be there, and he was sleepy all the time.
Yeah.
And then I found out that Edward Furlong was also going through like a custody battle during that film. His aunt and somebody, uncle or whatever, were treating him like shit. So his mother took him back. It was, you know, and we all know Edward Furlong was a troubled guy.
Yeah, definitely a lot of substance abuse and alcohol abuse and stuff like that. Yeah, but I mean, I think because of like his first, what if his first fucking thing was Terminator 2, right? More or less.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then he was like, he was, because of the success of that movie, he's a fucking movie star, right? I mean, because of how successful that movie was. So they put him in this in the lead, and yeah, he's just a teenager who doesn't, you know, unfortunately doesn't have like, you know, the training, the discipline, the acting or the craft or taking it serious.
And it also kind of, I don't know, like all the other teens were obviously people in their 20s.
Yep.
You know, so it always looked weird every time we talked to anybody.
Yeah. And, you know, rewatching this movie, I saw actually a lot of Hitchcock influenced in this movie. Did you catch any of these?
Yeah.
Like,
The monitor.
CD player. Yeah. Trickster's hair.
Glass of milk.
Clearly the glass of milk, John.
The constant, the constant use of milk throughout the fucking movie.
Clearly a reference to Psycho. No, I don't know. But yeah, no, there's some nice flourishes of like Vertigo and like Rear Window, fucking, you can say Psycho, even POV, the POV shot. It's a little bit more Carpenter, right?
Yeah. Oh, I did like how he's like a kind of a perv, but he's super in love, and then later you find out she's like, I'm also a perv.
Okay. We're perverts together.
We're pervs together. Yeah.
And I would say this movie touches upon things rather contemporarily that unexpectedly, right? Because there's no way they could have predicted the future unless, yeah, you know, they're from the future. But I love the fact that he is an isolated teenager who has all of the gadgets or whatever, and he doesn't really even want to interact with the world anymore, that he's literally filming his neighbor who undresses by the window as they do, female neighbor. Yet he seems more, instead of like watching her, he seems more interested in filming her and then watching it through a monitor, and probably is imagining like, oh, look how great the crystal clear my video looks, instead of like actually like interacting with what's going on. Similar to like, compare it, another comparison I could make for modern times would be like when people record stuff at concerts. Like there's the band and people always have their phones out and they're recording, watching their phones and not really like living in the moment of what's going on, right? So
yeah. I mean, you could also, I think he was doing that though, just so like if she looked up, wouldn't see him while she's fucking undressing. she'll look up and be like, oh, well, thank God, it's just a video camera pointing at me. It's not, he's not there looking at me. That would be weird.
That would be weird, yeah. Yeah.
It's just a video, I think that's a video camera and there's a flashing red light. I don't know what that means, but yeah, I think it's fine.
Yeah, and I think like, what I enjoyed about the movie is I feel like this movie solved one of the things that you might have run into with a movie about like computers or like video games, is like, how do you write something interesting about a guy sitting in front of a computer or playing a video game? They kind of solved that in a very fun way, right? This sort of, I wouldn't even say it's like modern equipment, right? It's like this weird CD computer video game thing that is not really supposed to be like contemporary or anything. It's supposed to be like state of the art or something more.
I think, yeah, I don't know why this wasn't really introduced, but you know, you get the sense like for sure he's been isolated since his mother died, which I don't know if you caught that his mother died in a car accident. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I was reading the trivia for this, and one of the trivia things was like, it is implied that his mother died in a car accident and he hurt his knee, and then that's why he limps and has the scar. Like, it's the fucking beginning of the movie. Like, what do you mean it's implied? So stupid. He looks at photos and he's like remembering his mom and looking at photos, and it's the same person. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that he's just been alone and been like tinkering with his shit to make, like, he's got an assistant that he calls Igor or Igor. Which uncredited, but the guy that plays a trickster did the voice for that too.
Yeah, and he has fucking he has like basically Siri in his room, right? Where he's communicating with it and like dialing the phone, and he has picture. It's, you know, strangely, I think BrainScan has predicted the future of all technology here.
You know, I will say there was only really one moment where I was like, "Boo." Is when, because I enjoyed the shit out of this movie, was when Edward Furlong is angry at the trickster, which, okay, we should explain. His buddy Kyle, right? That's his name?
Right.
Is like, hey, there's this new game out right now. It's like a VR thing called Brain Scan. And he's like, oh, I'm going to, you know, he gets goes up to his room and he's like, fuck it, let me order this thing. So he calls the number, which is 1-800-555-FEAR, right? And, or whatever their area code is. I'm sorry. I think that's what it was. And immediately gets the thing. He gets like zapped by something, and it's like whatever. And then he eventually meets the person that's introducing the game, the trickster, who's clearly some sort of like internet, I don't know, technology demon or something.
His bright red hair, shaved sides of his head, and yeah, it's like a
huge red mohawk,
and
earrings, and long fingers with long nails, and
yeah,
he dresses kind of like a ringleader from a circus, but it's very punk rock style. Like, it's very telling of the metal of the era.
Right. Yeah, he looked like early. He's dressed like early metal guy or something. Early 90s metal guy. Yeah, which as a kid I was like, this is fucking cool. I love this look. I did.
Yeah.
I still do. I think it's actually rather striking. It has like a sort of iconicness to it.
I thought it worked. I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. Like, obviously the prosthetics aren't gonna hold up to what we've been used to, but it was like fine. I was like, this is. He's also like a, again, a digital demon, so he can look bad if he wants, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. He can. I mean, he's putting his finger in like light sockets and stuff and get electrocuted.
But I liked he's Edward Furlong is mad at him, and this is the part where the only part where I was like, boo. Edward Furlong's like, blah, blah, blah. Does that compute? And I'm like, boo. T2 reference. Boo. Not because of T2, but just because, like, don't do that.
Oh, I didn't even catch that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, lame.
Yeah.
Edward Furlong's got one thing to his name. Lame.
Yeah, I want to also say, I feel like, I think this is actually a really well-shot movie, too. Like, it's pretty well,
it wasn't bad at all.
You could... Yeah. It's to me. It's clearly shot on film, right? And it you could tell. You can really see every frame of this, and it looks really good. It's shot very groundedly, very, you know, simply. You wouldn't by the eye be super impressed by that. I actually really like the direction and the cinematography of the movie, and a lot of the performances in it too. Except for Furlong. God damn, he just gets really whiny.
Did you know Edward Furlong is Mexican, by the way?
Oh, no, I don't know. I may know that.
Edward Waltar Furlong was born in Glendale, California, and is
Armenian?
His mother is Eleanor and is from a Mexican family.
Oh. Did not know he was from Glendale.
He was also born in 77. He's like a lot older than I thought he was. I mean, I knew he was older, but I didn't think 77 for some reason.
That tracks, right? 15?
He's 15. Yeah. Oh, for sure, yeah. What else is there to say? Yeah, that was the only part where I was like, boo.
Yeah.
Also, why did the Kimberly character always look like, some scenes she looked fine, and then other scenes I'm like, is she going through it? What's going on? She looks fucking disheveled. Like, it's like strung out or something.
Yeah. Yeah, she...
It's a weird But then I guess it also kind of makes sense. It could be whatever because of the way this wraps up. You're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like if you first watch this, you probably are not going to like the Kimberly character because she's very one note. But there's a very, without spoilers, very specific reason as to why she's like that. And we're...
The same with Frank Langella's character, right. Also is kind of like a lame cop.
Right, yeah. But it's... You know, without spoiling it, kind of like... explains itself enough to where it's like pretty plausible.
Yeah, which I did remember how it ended.
Mm-hmm.
I just was not old enough to appreciate how well written this was. it's not the greatest thing on earth, but it's also like, oh, there isn't really any plot holes at all. It makes sense. Everything makes sense.
Yeah, and you can even now knowing Andrew Kevin Walker wrote it, I feel like those, like, the murder and, like, the crime aspects of it really pop in this movie. They really, like, make sense. Yeah. They're not, like, movie written. They're very, like, thought out and, like, very procedural, yes, and stuff like that. Like, it kind of all makes sense. Like,
the first kill was, now watching it now older, a lot more brutal than I remember it, mm-hmm, being.
Yep, I agree with that too.
It was like, that was graphic. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that you didn't actually see the next kill. I don't know, maybe it would have made the movie too long or would have been too much. Also because it was like a cool little like, well, who's the next person he has to kill? Like, who's that? And then when you see the charm, which I didn't catch right away, but I was like, oh, fuck, that's Homeboys, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did appreciate that too. It's kind of like a really smart way of revealing something to the audience without showing them, you know what I mean? And, well, not showing them, but like but showing something and then being like, oh, it's this person. And then you know, again, without spoiling, but yeah. Very tight, well written script, you know? Probably the only thing I didn't like was that weird thing when he called the number and he like gets like a electrocution jolt or whatever. I felt like, well, I was like, what is this? This is weird. That seemed a bit implausible.
Well, that I think that is the beginning of the game, right? I don't think the game actually started when he started popping in the CD-ROM.
Okay.
I think he was already in the game.
Hmm.
And then, you know, the only way to get out of this is to finish the game, which I appreciated because there was a lot of moments where like, oh, well, like why wouldn't he just tell the police? But I'm like, nobody's gonna fucking believe him. And he did, you know, they catch him with the very first kill because he killed somebody,
right? Because it's the game is mimicking murder, but it's supposed to feel real life. But they try to part of the plot is that like they try to blur the line between real murders. Is it really going on? Is it part of a video game? And that's kind of like the whole middle part.
Yeah. Should we go into spoilers just so I feel like I don't think they're really spoilers because it's like the middle of the movie, but it feels like I'm giving away spoilers.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No. Stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers. So yeah, Edward Furlong he did kill that first person because when he was like, oh, where did you put the prize? And it was like, he cut off the foot because it had a tattoo on it.
Mm-hmm.
Which was curious. I'm like, why does this man have this weird tattoo on his ankle?
It was the 90s.
it was the 90s, yeah. And he kept it in his fridge, which I do like that they probably only had the location for whatever amount of money, so you never got to see... You got to see the living room a little bit, right?
Because
mm-hmm. there's, like, it's always up in his, like, his room, which is the attic, I guess,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And then at one point, Frank Langella is, like, breaking into the house through the back, and you see, like, oh, it's a lakeside house? It's like a fancy fucking neighborhood.
Well, I mean, it's implied that he's rich, right? That's kind of why he's able to buy all these things to isolate himself from. Because it's also said that he's basically, his dad is like not involved in his life.
No, he lives alone, kind of.
He basically lives alone. Yeah, his dad's always on the road and business trips and stuff like that. So.
Oh yeah, he's a traveling musician. He has a son named Billy Corgan and a son named Bill Burr.
But yeah, so like, so yeah, so then he kills his, what we were heavily implying, that he kills his quote unquote witness, right? His best friend, Kyle.
Yes.
And then the trickster is like manipulating him the whole way, gaslighting him to kill other people in his life.
Well, yeah, it's like the third, what did he say? The third act. He was calling him Max, I think, right? I think. Third stage, maybe, is like, you don't have to kill anybody. All you got to do is erase the evidence. And he's like, what? What do you mean? And the trickster at this point is like manipulating him via conversation. Also, you know, like being like, oh, we're buddies. So I had a snack and he's eating raw chicken and banana slices with mustard on top.
As you do.
So this is where you get Edward Furlong is aware that he is the person that's doing all these things. So they don't do the weird digital thing. Like it's like, oh, it's a VR game anymore. Cause he's aware that it's real.
Right.
And he tries to go hide the evidence. I think he had to cover up was like a footprint in the, where he buried the foot.
Right. In the,
where there's like a, some sort of German shepherd or something that keeps popping up, which I thought was the trickster, but apparently it's a random dog. He gets there and one of the cops kind of finds him, right? And it wasn't even his fault, but like a bunch of bricks fell on the dude. And then I thought this part was funny because Edward Furlong was like, oh, I killed somebody, but he didn't. He didn't do anything that time. But the dude is never able to tell anybody Edward Furlong was there. And I thought this was really funny. I'm sorry. But he comes out and there's like a search party looking for like, oh, who's out here? We think we found the killer. And this guy's like, hey, I'm a cop, freeze. But he has his gun pointed at everybody. So he gets fucking shot. I'm like, why did he have his gun pointed?
Yeah. Dude.
That was weird.
It was weird.
And then I watched this with my partner and she was making fun of that too. And I was like, nah, it, you know what? It seems plausible. It's America, right? It's just like, you're crossing the street and the cop's like, oh, let me help you. And he just like pulls his gun out, points it at you and points it at other cars. Like, come on, I'm helping you cross the street.
Yeah. That was a rather dumb scene because I mean, literally Franklin Jell's like any of you guys pull, I'm doing a search party. If any of you guys, pull out a gun and shoot anybody, I'm going to throw you in jail or something. So
yeah.
Clearly these guys went to jail. Yeah,
and
go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, if you had more to add to that, I was just gonna say, like the last person he has to kill is, of course, gonna be Kimberly,
right? Who at this point, well, what I was referring to earlier was that she's very like, oh, Michael, I love you. Like she seems like overly into him.
Yeah,
and sort of the reveal is that was just the game. That was just what he imagined her to be like, so he doesn't really know her, and it's more evident at the end when he actually skipping ahead, right, he gets out of the game and he realizes that it was all, everything up to a certain point was the game, and he's still on the first night, the first day one, all this time that had passed hadn't really passed. So
he hadn't done anything of those things yet.
So then he, I think in a rather smart moment, is like, oh, I'm tired of living in this secludedness, and tries to go out and talk to Kimberly and ask her out. But he asks her...
Which I like that conversation. That was fucking weird.
Yeah.
He's like, come on, will you go out with me? And she's like, I mean, no, I can't say yes to that right now. And he's like, oh, shit. But he doesn't look terribly bummed. It seems like, oh, well, at least I tried. And then she's like, but I'll think about it. And he's like really excited, but I'll think about it. And I was like, that was such a polite way to let somebody down. And then, yeah. And then like he pulls like he's like, she turns for a second and he pulls like the photos she's been taking of him. And it's like, what? And then when she walks away, like, oh, I gotta go. And then she fucking kisses him. I'm like, this is the wildest mixed signals I've seen. I would be so confused.
Yeah, it's rather refreshing that like she said, no, I don't. This is not appropriate for you to be asking me out. I don't fucking know you, you know, at all. Even though like I like you and I clearly am into you, but like no, this isn't, because she clearly was with some other guy and the other guy was like puking. Yeah. So it's clearly she was like, you know, the timing of it is really bad, right? And but then you said, like, but I guess they as a movie's gonna movie and be like, maybe there's something here, but like the way he approached it was dumb. But the Michael character is having his like Christmas Carol, end of Christmas Carol moment, right? Where he's just like running through the streets, like celebrating that it was all just a dream or whatever, his new lease on life kind of thing.
Which is his name Kyle or Mikey?
Kyle, his friend.
Kyle was like trying to get a hold of him, and he said like, dude, I've been trying to get a hold of you, like don't get that game, because apparently it gave some guy like an aneurysm and blah blah blah.
Yeah,
so it's like he's aware of how the game could turn bad, so he gives it to the principal who canceled their horror club.
Yeah, this is one of those like weird ending things, you know, like well, I'll have like an interpretation of it. Like on its surface, it's very cruel. It's very, very cruel that he could potentially, you know, harm or
fucking freak out
or worse, right? But I think if we're looking at it from like the lens of a teenager, you know, having put sort of, this is sort of his like still his push up against authority, right? Because the principal took his horror film club from him for showing Death Part 2. And so
which also it was kind of established that this game for him was everything that was deep-seated within him,
right? Yes,
like, because it's also hard to tell whether it feels like the game does exist in the world, but maybe the game he got was not real. Maybe this trickster guy really is a fucking demon just fucking with people.
Yeah, that's one of those where he kind of shows up behind him, and now this,
like, Edward Furlong's like, oh, we're buddies, you know?
Yeah,
like,
after he kind of put him through all that. It's a very confusing ending, in my opinion. It's not a good ending. To me, it's not a good ending. I get the what.
Oh, because it gets even more confusing, because the credits start to roll and then there's an extra scene. Did you see that?
No. What happened?
Okay, so the credits start to roll. There's an extra scene, and then you hear the trickster go, "Oh, but don't forget." And then that dog, that like sort of German Shepherd style dog, has the foot and is running to the front door of like some house. And I was like, but I thought that didn't happen. So that was confusing.
Yeah, that is weird. They stay. It's almost like they're still to the last minute still trying to be like, did it happen? Did it not happen?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they don't have a good, they didn't have a good ending then. I would argue that. It's not a particularly good last scene. I get what it's implying, and it's supposed to be a little bit of fun and like, oh, like he's giving the game to the principal to have this terrible experience, which is just an awful thing to do to another person, could potentially have an aneurysm or something and die. But we're supposed to think, but clearly that's catered to like teenager logic, right? Like, oh, you're getting one up on an adult. And then the whole foot thing again is kind of like, oh, maybe it did happen. Maybe it's not happening kind of thing. Or maybe it's gonna happen. You know what I mean?
Maybe it's gonna happen. Oh, like, oh, that makes sense. Like, maybe the principal is forced to cut the foot off. I don't know.
Exactly. It's stupid. It doesn't make sense.
It is kind of dumb, but I think I appreciate it trying to be not a happy ending.
Yeah, yeah. They're trying to
Because if it ended with like, oh, Edward Furlong kissed that girl, I'd have been like, eh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Other than the soundtrack is fucking rad.
Yeah.
Oh, we didn't explain when Primus pops up, which I have a fun story about that album. It's Tales from the Punch Bowl. That's the first Primus CD I ever got, and I got it when it came out because my older brother ordered a bunch of CDs through, was it BMG or Columbia House? One of the two.
Right.
And he went to the store to buy it, and he forgot that he had ordered it. And he was like, you want this? And it was my first like Primus CD in 1984. So I was like listening to Green Day's Dookie and fucking Primus's Tales from the Punch Bowl.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm fucked up. But I thought that was rad because the trickster comes out and he's looking through all the CDs and he's like, do you have anything good? He's like, never leave home without it. And he's like, how does he cough it up? Or like, he does something weird to bring out the CD. Which also, yeah. The trickster is really bad about CD etiquette. He keeps rubbing his grubby palms all over the fucking CD.
Yeah, he does fucking long nail, cocaine long nail. Fucking
like, yeah, his little, yeah, his like floppy fingers. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he pops in Primus, and I was like, yeah.
I thought it was cool as fuck.
Yeah, I was like, rad. I mean, the soundtrack was rad. Fucking Tad and, yeah, Mudhoney.
It had his shit. Yeah, it had his shit. It was a really good soundtrack. Yeah, this is peak mid-90s early Rolando movie he loved.
Yeah. And only thing better than this was Lawnmower Man. Let us know if you want us to do Lawnmower Man
one day
with Pierce Brosnan and Jeff Fahey.
Yeah, maybe we'll do Lawnmower Man 2 just for fun.
Skip to 2. Clearly the better. who is the Lawnmower Man in that one? It was also somebody that became famous later. It was
Shit.
No, I don't.
No, I don't remember, but I will look it up. Hold on, this thing's taking forever.
Oh, it was Matt Fuhrer. The guy that played he was in Watchmen as the Moloch,
right? The cancer guy. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
He was in The
Stand.
The Stand.
Trash Can Man. That
carried the rocket. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing actor.
The rocket. The fucking nuke. What am I saying? Yeah. So that's Brain Scan.
Yeah.
Scanned my brain. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah, this was a nice revisit. All right, John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you know. Show us your sexy.
Don't do that. Just rate the movie. I'm going to give Brain Scan might be tainted by nostalgic love for the film 8.5 sexy spooky bones.
Yeah, I was hovering around a 7, but I think this actually is a really good movie. Like, it's not the best.
Like, it's pretty good.
It's not perfect. It's not universally will be held as a great cinematic achievement. But
goddamn it, I was like, yeah, I like this movie. When I was watching, I was like, yeah, it's still just as good as I remember, and like for whatever feelings I have for it.
Yeah, it's not like the Buena Vista Social Club or like Citizen Kane or anything. but it's definitely...
No, because it's actually good.
It's actually... Yeah, I've heard of this movie. It's actually a very, very charming movie. Yes, I would also want to give it an 8 as well. Cool. Nice. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky and clean those CD-ROMs.
Mm-hmm.